Okay, hello everyone, to the sixth session of our Tensor Network meeting. We're very happy to begin the session with Tobias Hartung, who's going to tell us about dimensional expressivity analysis for quantum circuits. Tobias, please take it away.
Thanks, Michael, and of course, thanks to all the organizers for organizing the event. Shame we can't come to Canada. Would have been lovely, but hey. Online it is. And yeah, quite a number of the previous talks have already discussed quantum circuits and quantum simulations to various degrees. And today I want to talk about one of the questions that usually doesn't get asked until you're actually trying to make a quantum simulation work. And that is, what makes a good circuit? Now, suffice it to say that there is no right answer to that. And it really depends on the application you have in mind, but there are certain guiding principles. And in particular, I will be looking at some of the principles coming from variational quantum simulations and try to address them using this dimensional expressivity analysis as a tool. So the plan for today is to start setting the stage and going through the ropes of quantum simulations by talking a little bit about quantum simulations and variational quantum simulations in particular, then discuss the analysis in detail as well as some hardware implementation ideas that we have. And then there is a section on physical symmetries, which I doubt I'll have time to go through, so I'll be happy to take the question to go through that section, and I'm more than happy to use up the entire discussion time for that. And well, finally, a conclusion. But let's start off with what are variational quantum simulations and why do we care about them? And in general, if we're having a variational quantum simulation, the idea is that we want to find a quantum state that minimizes a cost function. And this is also why we care about them, because there are certain cost functions that are easy to evaluate, or at least efficiently evaluable on a quantum device, that are very difficult to evaluate on classical machines. So for example, we could think of some non-trivial Hamiltonian, and we're looking for the ground state of that Hamiltonian by minimizing the energy quadratic form. Now, if we are looking to find a quantum state on a quantum device, that means that we do need to use our quantum device and to manipulate the qubits. And that's going to be done by means of quantum gates, where on a single qubit, I'll mainly be using the Pauli gates, X, Y, and Z, as well as the Hadamard gate. And then for multiple qubits, we have entanglement gates such as a C0, which is a X gate that is applied provided that a certain control qubit is set to 1. So in this case, I have the first qubit to be the control and the second qubit the target. And as we can see here, if we have a 0 in the first qubit, then the outcome is going to be the same. Whereas if we have a 1 in the first qubit, then we flip the second qubit respectively. And we can generalize this to controlled G gates, so to say, where we have a control qubit and it will apply a gate G to a target qubit or multiple target qubits, provided that the control is 1. And in this way, we can basically construct arbitrarily large entanglement gates, like we could consider a CC0 or a CCC0. But to make things really interesting, we want to use parametric gates, because that's where the variational part for the quantum simulation comes into play. And these will be of the form e to the minus I over 2 times some parameter theta times some gate G, where G usually would be one of the Pauli gates, but it could also be a multi-qubit gate, such as an XX rotation, which then itself introduces entanglement itself. The variational quantum simulation then starts setting the quantum device in some initial state. In most cases, this will just be the zero state, but for our applications, it doesn't really matter what it is initialized in, so we'll just keep it as some psi init. Then we apply a sequence of gates in order to produce the state that we want to evaluate our cost function on. And to make it variational, some of these states will depend on parameters. And an example for one such circuit would therefore be we initialize our device in the product state 0 for 2 qubits. Then we have a bunch of Y and Z rotations. Then we may have a non-parametric gate, in this case a C naught, and a few more parametric gates. So overall, this would be a parametric quantum circuit. And in general, I will define a parametric quantum circuit to be any map from some parameter space into the state space of my quantum device. And this definition takes into account the state initialization. So I actually have a state that comes out of it and not just a unitary map, which would correspond to the gate sequence. In general, you can take either point of view, but the mathematics look a little bit neater if we do the point evaluation on the initialized state going forward. That's why I'm putting it into the definition here. Now, the variational quantum simulation takes in two parts. One part is a quantum part, where we use the quantum device to measure the cost function at the state C of theta that is given by our parametric quantum circuit and our parameter set that we've chosen to feed in. And then we have a classical part that basically reduces to a feedback loop optimizer, which tries to find the parameter set that minimizes our cost function if we evaluate it on the state generated by this parametric quantum circuit. And in that sense, when we're talking about variational quantum simulations, we can focus on what kind of optimizers we want to look at, in particular with respect to noise resilience and these kind of things. But today I'm going to focus on the quantum part, which is basically providing the input values for our feedback loop. Now, what are the obstacles that we're trying to address here? In general, if you have a number of parameters in your variational quantum simulation, you want this number to be very large, because the larger the number of parameters, the larger the space of states that you can reach, and therefore the higher the chance that you can actually find the solution within the states that you can produce on your quantum device using this circuit. Furthermore, even if you have a variational quantum simulation where you know that your circuit is sufficiently expressive to find the solution, for example, many applications, especially in traffic and logistics problems, have very easy solutions that can be generated with very small numbers of parameters. If you have too few parameters, then you're effectively trying to find an optimization problem with constraints, and therefore you could introduce artificial local optima, which would cause your quantum simulation to terminate in a state that is not the actual solution. So in order to circumvent any such problems, we want our number of parameters to be large. On the other hand, we want the number of parameters to be small, because more parameters means more noise coming from the quantum device. And in particular, the classical optimizers, most of them work more efficiently with fewer numbers of parameters. And to address this trade-off, I want to propose this dimension exclusivity analysis today, where we're saying a quantum circuit is maximally expressive if it can generate all physically relevant states, which means in particular, our solution will be reachable, and at least within the physical state space, there will be no artificial local optima. On the other hand, we want it to be minimal in order to keep the number of parameters sufficiently small. And if we're talking about this in terms of the dimensionality of the set of physical states, being minimal means that we do not have any parameters in our quantum circuit that don't increase expressivity, i.e. that don't increase the dimension of the set of reachable states. And for that, I'm going to have to introduce some assumptions on the analysis. First and foremost, I will assume that my parameter space is a compact manifold without boundary that is automatically satisfied if you're looking at rotation gates, because in that case, you will just have a flat torus with dimension being the number of parameters. I will furthermore assume that my state space is also a compact manifold and without boundary, and it automatically has to be a submanifold of the device state space. But for many physical applications, this state space can be significantly smaller than the 2 to the number qubits dimensional Hilbert space the quantum device can represent. The assumption on having no boundary can be broken in reality, but as you will see, most of the analysis techniques are local. So unless you are working on the boundary of the state space, this actually doesn't come into play and everything else will go straight through. The third assumption is me being pedantic. And that is, I assume that my quantum circuit is continuously differentiable, where I also have to say that all standard parametric gates are analytic, and I'd be hard pressed to even come up with an idea as to how to build an interesting parametric gate that would not be analytic or at least C infinity. But technically, we will need this assumption. And finally, I will assume that the state, or that the image of my quantum circuit, i.e. the set of reachable states, is contained in the physical state space. And this really just means that if we're talking about maximal expressivity, at some point we want to be able to decide that we have sufficiently many parameters in our circuit so that the entire state space can be parameterized. And so if my quantum circuit generates states that are outside of the physically relevant space, then I could just keep on adding parameters without actually increasing the overlap with the physical states. And then the entire analysis suddenly becomes futile. So when you're actually trying to implement a quantum simulation, one of the things that you really want to make sure is that you only generate states that are necessary in order to be efficient with your quantum gates. And therefore, I will assume that you've already done this and you're mapping yourself into the interesting space that we're working with. Now, under the assumptions that I've stated earlier, this set of reachable states is a manifold, at least locally, doesn't have to be globally. But again, we're only caring about it locally, really. And we can prove that this is locally a manifold. And so I will call it the circuit manifold that will sometimes be called M throughout my slides. Now, when we want to do the dimensional expressivity analysis, we have three objectives. The primary objective is to find the parameters that are necessary to generate the circuit manifold. I.e., if we have any parameters that do not contribute to our expressivity, then we want to get rid of them. The secondary objective is to further remove any parameters that only contribute parts that we don't care about. And a very common example of this would be a global phase. And because we're doing quantum simulations, if we change our state just by a global phase factor, it has no impact. So any parameter in our parametric quantum circuit whose only effect beyond the parameters that we already have is the introduction of a global phase, we can get rid of as well. And the third objective, which I'm likely not going to be able to talk about, is the idea as to when have we reached maximal expressivity, i.e. how many parameters do we need, and can we use this information in order to custom design quantum circuits for a given application. And this, again, really goes into the physical symmetries part. So most of my talk will be looking at the primary and secondary objective here. All right. So first and foremost, we want to identify redundant parameters. And because our circuit manifold M is only considered locally in this analysis, the first thing that we note is that we can actually describe our manifold in terms of looking at the tangent space. And because linear algebra is easier than differential geometry, we want to express our redundancy or independence relations of parameters in terms of the tangent space, which means we need to look at the tangent vectors that we obtain through taking partial derivatives with respect to each of the parameters. In particular, a parameter theta k is redundant if and only if its corresponding tangent vector is a linear combination of the other tangent vectors, which directly leads into an inductive procedure to identify independent and redundant parameters, where we start with some parameter theta 1 that we choose arbitrarily. And that one cannot be redundant unless you choose to build a parametric gate, which actually is trivial and the parameter has no impact. So as long as your parametric gate actually does something when you change your parameter theta, this will not be redundant. And as an inductive step, we now have k different independent parameters, and we need to check whether our k plus first parameter, i.e. its tangent vector, is a linear combination of the previous k. And here the first non-trivial observation has to come in, because although these tangent vectors live in a complex valued space, our parameter space is a real manifold, so we need to check this linear combination with respect to real coefficients only. And finally, once we have identified any redundant parameters in our circuit, we can remove them as necessary. And again, there's a caveat here where removal of a parameter means setting the parameter to a constant value, which not always corresponds to removal of a gate. There are gates where there is just no parameter value in which the gate acts as the identity. But if that is the case, then you might be able to remove a gate. Although there are arguments as to when you're doing the dimensional expressivity analysis on the fly while you're running your quantum simulation, you might not always want to remove the gate, but keep it as a constant gate in and of itself. So how do we now check for this independence? Well, we need to check the partial Jacobian, which I'm going to call JK, and because we need to check it with respect to real coefficients, rather than looking at just the derivatives of my quantum circuit, I'm going to split them into real and imaginary part. And we need to now check whether this has full rank, which is usually easier if we take its square, which I'm going to define as SK, and check whether this one, being a K by K matrix, is invertible. That means if we are doing this inductively, we can assume that our first k minus 1 parameters are independent. And so my kth parameter is dependent if and only if this determinant vanishes. However, checking this determinant in itself is really not advisable because this value is of order 4 to the minus k. So you pretty quickly run into problems of machine error. And it's usually better to notice that SK is a positive matrix, so it's a better check to compute the minimal eigenvalue of our SK and check it against some tolerance epsilon to conclude that our determinant is non-zero. And unfortunately, we will see later on that this is a good test for independence, but there is no really good test for dependence, because we will be looking at SK subject to some noise, and checking whether the eigenvalue is actually equal to zero will be a problem if we have perturbations on our matrices SK. So we will be able to relatively reliably identify independent parameters, but we might have a problem with identifying dependent parameters. And that would mean that when we're actually doing the analysis later on, one thing that may happen is that we choose to identify a parameter that actually is independent and call it dependent, because we don't know whether it is dependent or not, or we cannot positively identify it as independent. this will mean that our analysis in application might not yield an optimal circuit reduction to just independent parameters, but at least we do not assume that our circuit is more expressive than it really is. And for most applications, that is the more important thing. But let's look at this in terms of an example. And a trivial example that is relatively quickly to do by hand would be a 1-qubit circuit where we first do an X rotation and then a Z rotation. And we can use this to rewrite this in a slightly nicer form. And now we need our matrices JK. First of all, take the derivatives, split them by real and imaginary part. The theta 1 derivative will be the only column in J1. The theta 1 and theta 2 derivatives will make up J2. And in general, we note that JK will be the first K columns of JK prime whenever K prime is larger than K. So when you're actually doing the analysis, you only need to compute one of the J's, namely the JN, where N is the number of parameters, in order to get all of the information that you need. Now, you could use a computer algebra system to check that these really are linearly independent, and it'll do so in a few seconds, but you can see that this becomes rather arduous relatively quickly if you go to a large number of parameters, and that's why computing the S matrices can become more handy. In this case, S1 is just 1 over 4, which is very much invertible. So first parameter is independent, as I've noted earlier. That should always be the case unless this gate is trivial. And the second S is just 1/4 times the identity, which is also invertible. So a second parameter is independent as well. Now, to lower the bar on triviality, we could also look at the circuit where we first do an X rotation and then do another X rotation. And hopefully we will see here that the second gate is dependent on the first one and therefore could be removed. And again, we can write out our circuit in coordinates. We compute our J2, we compute our S1, that is still 1/4. So the first X gate or the X rotation gate is still fine. It is independent and it does increase expressivity, but the S2 matrix is obviously non-invertible, having eigenvalues 0 and 1/2, which means our theta 2 parameter is dependent. It does not increase the space of states that we can produce using this circuit, and we could really just set this theta 2 to a constant, and because it's a rotation gate, we could choose this constant to be 0, in which case we actually get rid of this second gate, and we have reduced our circuit to a minimal circuit. But this can now be used in some slightly more non-trivial ways, and in order to do this, one thing that comes up relatively often is the removal of unwanted symmetries. And really where this comes in is the idea where you can start building a quantum circuit using a general recipe, but that recipe may be more general than you actually want it to be. And now that you have a quantum circuit that may have additional symmetries than your physical state space, or there are certain parts of the physical state space that you don't care about, you want to remove these symmetries. Prime example would be a global phase factor. In general, let's assume that for every parameter value theta, there exists at least one theta prime, such that our states C of theta and C of theta prime differ only by an action of the unwanted symmetry, which in case of a global phase factor would just be an e to the I alpha. In order to get rid of such a symmetry, we want to find a gate block, or at least some other way of generating this unwanted symmetry. And the number of parameters here depends on the symmetry that you're looking at. For a global phase factor, well, that's a U1 symmetry. U1 is one-dimensional, so we're looking for a one-parametric gate block. if you have an SU2 symmetry, then you would have three parameters in here. And in general, if your symmetry is n-dimensional, then you're looking for n parameters in your gate block. This gate block will then be inserted into your original quantum circuit, and you can, or what the idea that you're trying to do with that is that you want to generate the unwanted symmetry and enforce it, which means that if you're then doing the analysis and looking for redundant parameters, by enforcing your parameter phi to be independent, you will enforce that any of your parameters that you're actually interested in, i.e. your thetas, that only contribute the symmetry, will become dependent. Later on, you then want to remove these gates, which means that there must be at least some value of your parameters phi, and let's call it phi zero, for which your change acts as the identity, and therefore you can then return to the original circuit that you were looking for. Now, if we look at this in terms of a global phase function, then what we're looking at is we first want to turn our initial state into the state zero by some u init. Then we take a rotation with respect to the Pauli Z gate, which introduces a global phase factor. And then we move back to our initial state, and we introduce this as our first operation, which gives us a new quantum circuit, C tilde, which depends on phi and theta. And phi is our new first parameter. And now we can do our expressivity analysis. For example, if we look at an X rotation, Z rotation, and a Y rotation, this one is a surjective map onto the one qubit state space. So, and these three are independent. So if I'm looking for a global phase factor, which definitely can be generated in this case, I am going to insert a Z rotation first. And this will mean that now I can do my dimensional expressivity analysis. I have a three-dimensional state space. I have four parameters. There has to be one redundant parameter. But because I choose phi as my first parameter, it will not be that one, but it has to be one of the theta 1, 2, theta 3. And doing so will show that it is theta 3, which we can now set to be a constant, for example, zero, and obtain a minimal, maximally expressive single qubit circuit to be an X rotation and a Z rotation. And this circuit can generate now all single qubit states up to a global phase factor. Similarly, this leads us into the question of prioritizing different gates, where we note that the dimensional expressivity analysis will declare whichever parameter comes first to be independent if you have mutually dependent parameters. But in applications, you might consider some gates more important than others. So we can think of some snippet of our quantum circuit to look like this, where we have a gate block G and 1G prime. And because J comes before K, our dimensional expressivity analysis will say, well, G will stay a parametric gate and G prime will become non-parametric. If, however, our simulation requires G prime to be parametric, or it would be more advantageous for G prime to be more parametric than G, we could just swap around the order of the indices, do the analysis on G prime with theta J and G with theta K, and now it will prioritize G prime to stay a parametric gate. How can we use this in a rather non-trivial example? Well, here is Qiskit's efficient SU22 local circuit on three qubits. This can be called from within Qiskit directly. And in this instance, we have 18 parameters. The state space is 14 dimensional. So there are definitely four gates that have to go. And if we do the expressivity analysis naively, then what we do is we start with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and so on. So in particular, as the last gates are these Z gates and then these Y gates, we're going to remove or likely remove gates from the end. And this is precisely what's happening. In fact, the first 14 parameters are all independent. And moving on from that, everything will be dependent. And our minimal, maximally expressive three qubits quantum circuit is given here. In particular, because it is maximally expressive, it can generate arbitrary product states. But if I were to give you the circuit and I were to give you a product state and ask you, how do you have to set your parameters in order to produce this product state, maybe because you want to initialize your quantum simulation with this state, this is a highly non-trivial problem. And it would be much better if we still had the Ry and Rz gates fully intact on this last layer. So for that, we can actually do our gate prioritization and start 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then continue 7, 8, and so on. And if we do the expressivity analysis like that, we obtain this equivalently minimal maximally expressive circuit. But now if I ask you tell me the parameter values in order to give me a given product state, this is easy. I'm just going to set all the first parameters to zero, which renders the entire first part of the circuit to the identity. And then I only have to do the single qubit rotations to rotate my state into the state that I want to initialize my expressivity analysis in. All right. So this sort of works, but all that I've said is actually really difficult to automate and implement. And this is not unsurprising, because if you look into a classical implementation of what I've talked about so far, you'll notice that at some way, shape, or form, you'll need to store these matrices JK. You don't have to load them fully in memory, but there are exponentially many terms that you need to somehow store or generate on the fly as you do your analysis. And this means that you have exponential requirements in the number of qubits for any classical implementation of the algorithm. And that means it's doomed to failure, even if you're looking at just 50 qubits. Instead, we propose a hybrid quantum classical implementation. And here we're going to use a quantum device to measure these matrices as k, where, first of all, these are k by k matrices. So the largest one is only n by n, where n is the number of parameters. And most importantly, we only need to measure the last one because the previous ones are contained as upper left k by k blocks of Sn. We can then check classically for invertibility. And this means that in memory, we at most need quadratically many requirements for the number of parameters. We quartically many CPU calls, and the number of quantum processing unit calls is also quadratic in the number of parameters and with respect to the noise level that you find acceptable for using or for measuring these SK using the quantum device. Overall, this is polynomial in the number of parameters and independent in the number of qubits. Of course, the number of qubits implies things about the number of parameters that you need in order to be maximally expressive. But if you have, say, a 10 parameter circuit, whether it is on 10 qubits or 1,000 qubits, the overall cost does not change. And in this sense, we think that this is a relatively efficient way of going about it. But again, this means we need to measure these SK. And for that, we need to look into these SK, and we realize that each element is a real part of a scalar product of the derivatives of our quantum circuit. And so I'm going to assume that all my gates will be rotation gates at this point, although this is not strictly necessary. We could consider any parametric gate such that the derivative is still a gate. But this is sufficient for now, and it is also very general because we can have lots and lots of rotation gates. We could have G to be a sum over all qubits of XX gates, or even we could have a rotation of a C0 gate, and all of this would be fine. Because if we do this, then our derivative itself is a constant factor times the gamma, and gamma is another quantum circuit with just one additional gate. In particular, if we're going back to our X rotation, Z rotation example, the gamma one has an additional x gate after my x rotation, and gamma 2 has an additional z gate after the z rotation. And in doing so, the sk will be made up of, well, constant factors and real parts of scalar products of quantum circuits, i.e. something where we have a chance of actually measuring it. To measure one of these real parts of the scalar product gamma mn, we want to generate a state phi mn, where I'm introducing an ancilla qubit, which, and the rest is going to be in state gamma m if the ancilla is zero, and in state gamma n if the ancilla is one. And because my gamma n only has one additional gate, this gate can be conditioned on the ancilla being zero, and the additional gate for gamma n can be conditioned on the ancilla being one. This means we can actually do this with just two controlled gates. And in the example for the x rotation, z rotation, we want to construct the state phi to one, i.e. as we are in condition to one, we want to have the x inserted, and if we are conditioned to zero, then we want a z inserted. We do this by taking the ancilla in zero, Hadamarding it, which turns it into 0 plus 1 over square root 2. Now we have the x inserted if the ancilla is 1, and we insert a z if the ancilla is 0, which we turn into a standard controlled z gate by flipping the values of the ancilla first into ancilla condition to 1 and then back into 0. So we can efficiently implement the state phi mn. Then we can do another Hadamard gate on the ancilla, which will give us this wonderful state. And if we now measure the ancilla, we will find that the ancilla is found in zero with probability one plus the quantity that we're looking for over two, which means we're in business, and the complete circuit for our SK matrix for our example of x rotation, z rotation would just be given by this wonderful short little circuit. And we note that for the II, i.e. the diagonal elements, we just get 1/4 all the time. So if we can think about implementing this, then we can also throw it onto some actual hardware. And here we use the circuit that we looked at earlier with the removal of the global phase on a single qubit. And the plots of four different randomly chosen parameter sets, where the circles are the second smallest eigenvalue of the SK matrix, and the triangles are the smallest eigenvalue of the SK matrices, and the filled ones are analytic results, the open ones are the IBMQ results that we got from Vigo with different numbers of measurements. Overall, this actually works relatively well. It's relatively stable, and we can relatively reliably identify the independent parameters, although sometimes we may be unlucky and not know whether or not something is independent. And in that case, we would go err on the side of caution and say, well, if we don't know, it might just as well be dependent, and add in another gate. We can look at this on different hardwares as well. And here we have four different chips, all supplied by IBM. And overall, everything performs similarly well, and it's all similarly stable. And we can go to two qubits, where it's still stable and performs well. But now we're starting to have problems, especially with the sixth and seventh and eighth eigenvalue in particular, because some of the eigenvalues start to become of the same order of magnitude as the hardware noise, which makes it increasingly difficult to unambiguously identify the independent parameters, although there are statistical tricks that you can play in order to increase your chances of actually being right about it. And looking at the time, I definitely do not have time to go into the physical symmetries. So for conclusion, what have we got? Well, we have an archive paper up on the archive a couple of weeks ago. There, everything that I've said is in much more painstaking detail. But more importantly, we have an analysis tool that can relatively reliably identify the independent parameters and therefore the redundant parameters of parametric quantum circuits. Once we use this physical symmetry section as well, we can also get the idea about when is my circuit maximally expressive. And as long as it is not maximally expressive, the codimension of the circuit manifold with respect to the physical state space manifold gives us a measure of deficiency, which implies that the larger this deficiency, the more likely we're going to introduce artificial local minima and other constraint problems that might cause our variational quantum simulation to terminate in a false solution. We can furthermore use this in order to remove unwanted symmetries and therefore to think about slightly more general construction means of quantum circuits, which we can then optimize into the ones that we actually care about. And again, using the physical symmetry section, we can obtain some information as to how to custom design certain quantum circuits for certain applications. Finally, this can be implemented efficiently using a hybrid quantum classical algorithm. And in particular, we can do this as an on-the-fly calculation, i.e., we could have a generic mean of constructing a parametric quantum circuit and optimize it in every step of our variational quantum simulation in order to have the best circuit that we need at this current situation. On the other hand, well, what do we need? We need better quantum hardware. The noise levels are the biggest problem at the moment in order to go to large circuits on many qubits. And so, yeah, we want less noise. If you are not in the business of building quantum hardware, this means we'd greatly appreciate if you look into noise mitigation and error mitigation in general, but also when it comes to the gate reduction and circuit optimization itself, the analysis only talks about parametric gate reduction. And there are similar methods that you can use for non-parametric gates, but the mathematics behind them is very different. They're usually very algebraic, whereas our main method is differential geometry. So they're not easily compatible. And the best thing that I can think of at the moment is to use the dimension expressivity analysis to make as many parameters as possible, or as many gates as possible, non-parametric, and then use the non-parametric gate reduction techniques in order to optimize your quantum circuit. But this fails at the point where you have many parametric gates because you will have small blocks of non-parametric gates interlaced with parametric gates, and having the parametric gates interlacing will break any global effort in circuit optimization, and therefore this suddenly becomes really hard. And yeah, it would be great to be able to somehow combine these techniques and find more global circuit optimization techniques for variational quantum simulations. And with that, I thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Tobias, on behalf of everyone. We started a bit late, so in fact, we do have some time for questions. If you have any, please unmute yourself and go ahead. I see that Timo Eksten has one. Timo, can you go ahead?
Yeah, right. So did I get it correctly that the number of dimensions need the number of parameters need to be the same as the number of dimensions you're having?
Yes.
All right, then I would have a continuation question. So you said, well, the number of dimensions I'm having is the number of parameters I need, but then it's quadratic in the number of parameters if I question on a, my wrong camera is activated, I'm sorry. So then it's quadratic in the number of parameters on the quantum chip. But doesn't that mean if I've, you know, I have an kind of exponentially growing dimensionality of my problem, that means also I need kind of squared exponentially growing number of parameters, and then I'd get it wrong. But then that would also mean that, you know, to use that, the query on the quantum chip is also exponentially growing.
Yes, so you have that problem no matter what. If your state space is growing exponentially large or exponentially with the number of qubits, then no matter what you do, you either do not go to parameterize the entire state space, or you have to deal with the state space growing exponentially large. And I say that's where the modeling question really comes into play, because if you are using this at a generic quantum simulation, then yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. And it has to happen because you cannot remove information unless you have means of removing that information without breaking your physics. But if you're looking at things like local Hamiltonians, you have a chance of looking at models that do not grow exponentially in state space with the number of qubits. And as soon as you have polynomial growth of the state space dimension in the number of qubits, then you're in business.
All right. But couldn't you then just simulate classically?
Not if you need the actual wave functions, because if you're still working with them, and unless you can parameterize them directly, then you're still needing exponentially much hardware resources.
Oh, okay, all right, that's fair. Thank you.
Are there any further questions to Tobias? Good. If not, let me thank you again.